Welcome to Here Come the Sequels, a full spoiler podcast where we take a look at popular film franchises one movie at a time. I'm Britton.
Popular franchises?
Yeah, I almost said possible. That was my little stutter there, because this was a possible franchise, and technically it is.
I'm Alex, by the way.
Yeah, guys, we're back. The G.I. Joes retaliated against us. They came for us, and yeah, we're here.
They said we see your Rise of Cobra reviews, and we will raise you one retaliation.
And boy, did they! This movie came out the same year as White House Down, a movie that has Channing Tatum in it.
That's true. Although I do believe that this was supposed to come out in 2012, and then they pushed it.
Oh, interesting.
I can't remember why, but I remember
the apocalypse.
Yeah. They're like, you know, if we do end up surviving the apocalypse and people are arising from the ashes, what they'll need to inspire them and fill them with hope is G.I. Joe retaliation.
The actual thing is they knew they couldn't stand up against movies like The Paperboy, Chronicle, and Piranha Double D.
Piranha Double D is probably about as much fun as G.I. Joe retaliation.
Oh, Born Legacy was 2012. Okay. There was some good stuff in there.
Well, good stuff for me, you know.
I like Born Legacy just fine.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess Tyler's not here to yell Jason at us Bourne for liking Born Legacy.
Jason Bourne is the one that I decry.
Well, I don't think anyone likes that movie. yeah, G.I. Joe 2. Retaliation, the Empire Strikes Back of the G.I. Joe film franchise.
Which is also essentially a reboot.
Yes.
Like, they immediately are like, well, the other stuff didn't happen, so now we're doing this stuff.
It's very weird how, like, on a plot level, it's like, okay, this could very easily be a sequel to the last one. But there is so much done to be like, yeah, we don't like what we did with the last one, though. We're going to just change as much as we can.
Yeah.
we're gonna keep just enough to officially say that this is a sequel and then ditch everything else.
Yeah, where the previous one is a sort of goofy sci-fi romp, this is basically an America First military paean. Not America First, but it's definitely like a military paean with a lot of hoo-ahs and a lot of people in tank tops hanging out in a bar.
Yep.
And bonding over being mean to each other.
Mm-hmm. Just like it was meant to be.
Yeah. And they don't have, like, crazy suits. They have some tech, but they don't have, like, I don't know. It feels like everything downgraded from the first movie.
Yeah. It's very weird as a sequel. We'll get into it. G.I. Joe, Retaliation from 2013, directed by Britain's favorite director of all time. He has it stamped on his forehead. It's official. Yep. John M. Chu. It has a 29% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 48% audience score.
Oh, wow.
Those are slightly underneath Rise of Cobra for both of those.
I think the only movies of his that I've seen are In the Heights and Crazy Rich Asians, neither of which I like as much as I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And he is making the Wicked duology, which, if you listen to my episode with Carly, you know all about my fears about that movie.
I will say, I feel like just having to say the phrase "the Wicked duology," I feel like that I could physically see that hurting you.
Make two 90-minute act one, act two. Don't add a bunch of crap. Just put it in there. End of the first movie is Defying Gravity. End of the second one is whatever the finale is. Don't. It's going to be 5 hours of a bunch of new stuff. No, we've got to watch SpongeBob dance around. Like, I don't want it. It'll be my favorite movie of the year. But I also know me, so. Oh, God. Anyway, G.I. Joe Retaliation, what's it about? Well, I'll read you to it. In the synopsis, which reads thus. In the continuing adventures of the G.I. Joe team, Duke, second-in-command Roadblock, and the rest of the Joes face a twofold threat. I don't think that means what they want it to. Not only is their mortal enemy Cobra rearing its ugly head again, but there's also a threat from within the U.S. government. There might be an imposter in the White House Meanwhile, Snake Eyes is on a search for inner peace, but he learns that his nemesis, Storm Shadow, is still alive. He's not really on a quest for inner peace. He's hanging out in a dojo training Elodie Young.
Yes, but also, two threats that they're facing, they're both Cobra.
Yeah.
Yeah, the president is Zartan. We watched the last movie.
It's all part of the same plan.
We did a whole podcast on this.
There's a pretty silly scene in this movie where I'll just go ahead and say Jonathan Pryce is good in this movie.
He is, dare I say, great in this movie. Like,
he's so funny.
Between this and Tomorrow Never Dies, like when it's a dumb action movie, he knows just how to play it.
He knows how to pit. He really does. He's such a great actor, and he's a lot of fun. He has a part where he has this weird thing where he's trying to disarm the world's nuclear powers.
Yes.
Complete nuclear disarmament so that he can control all the nuclear weapons, I guess.
Well, he wants basically to eliminate everyone's nuclear weapons because Cobra has created this special new satellite weapon, which is the Zeus cannon that destroys London. Mm. They destroy London in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
And they just kind of sweep that under the rug after it happens, like just, whatever. Basically the idea is that they're going to control the world because they now have these new weapons that are more powerful than nuclear weapons, and all the nuclear weapons are now gone.
Right. So he calls a summit of a bunch of different world leaders to talk about it. And at one point he's like, and you, and you, and you, and he's pointing at all of them. Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And it is kind of funny. North Korea is the last one to disarm, which is kind of funny. And there's a part where he's like, North Korea, and the North Korean leader just kind of puts his hands up like, what? What do you want?
I have so many questions about that scene. I think for a dumb action movie, it's completely fine. And it's sure. it's absurd in the right way. But like, you have all these dignitaries from around the world showing up, and they happen to have their briefcases with the nuclear, like, launch devices in them.
Right.
And then they're also able to deactivate all of them with just, like, the push of a button. Like, it's all very weird, and also, like, it's happening at Fort Sumter because...
Yeah.
History. It's wild. And I will say... we'll get more into the action scenes and stuff. I feel like this has the same problem as the last one, where I think it really goes downhill in the third act, but like in the complete opposite way, where I feel like the first one goes way too big and nuts and Star Wars-y, like I said. And then this one is just like, oh, you guys ran out of money.
Yeah, this movie. So there are two ways I would describe it. One is, it is not as silly as the first movie,
right,
but it is as stupid. It's still stupid, but it's not silly.
That's a very good way to put it. I couldn't quite put my finger on the difference. It's like, obviously, this is, quote unquote, more grounded because they're focusing more on the military side of things as opposed to the science fiction element. But yes, it is just as dumb.
Yeah. But the other way I describe it is, you know how when you go to a pizzeria and you get a nice pizza pie, but it's still, you got all the grease on it, and so you got to get the paper towel to kind of dab it and get all the grease off of it. Sure. And you're like, okay, it's still pizza, but I just kind of took all the oil and it looks a little different. It looks like somebody did that to a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
Because this movie, the literal look of the movie, and Die Hard 4 looked like this too, and I don't like it when movies look like this. It just looks like they're not sweaty yet.
Yeah,
like it looks like somebody dabbed all the Michael Bay actors and got the sweat off of them, but it's still kind of saturated color. Like, it's just not, and this is a purely personal thing, it's just not my tempo. I don't like when movies look like that. It doesn't look as appealing to me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting just because, you know, I talk so much about how I didn't really care for the visual aesthetics of the last film.
Sure.
And I think this is, like I said, this is closer to what I want, because G.I. Joe, from the beginning, like, it's about the military, it's about soldiers. So to turn it into this huge science fiction thing just feels really weird and different, and it feels like you're just kind of going against the grain when it's like that this is the obvious place you should be aiming for. Right. But yeah, it still feels like, oh, we can't get out from under the shadow of the Transformers movies, but we're just attacking it at a different angle.
And it's something like, I don't know what the happy medium is, because I was more entertained by the previous one because of how silly it was. But this one is like almost less interesting in the sense that you're just like doing a bunch of military stuff. You have military gear.
Yeah.
Whereas the previous one, you had like crazy tech and everything, which also makes Snake Eyes and his thing feel sillier in this movie.
Yeah.
But also his helmet doesn't have the lips on it anymore.
I really prefer the design of Snake Eyes in this.
This one. He does look like if Black Noir from The Boys was a Power Ranger.
Sure. It's fun. I like it.
No, yeah. I don't hate it. It's just, I kind of like the lips on the previous one.
If I remember correctly, one of the things that they argued about all while shooting the first one was how Snake Eyes was supposed to look. So there would be scenes where they're like walking around in the pit, just trading exposition, and you see Snake Eyes in the background, and he looks a little different. And they were like changing his design throughout the movie, and they finally settle on that design with the molded lips, which just, to me, that felt like almost like a Joel Schumacher influence.
I was gonna say, they called Joel real quick.
I'm like, but Snake Eyes doesn't talk. Why does he need that?
Right. Well, you know, it's to him. Yeah, I don't know.
it's a little weird, especially because I don't think he traditionally has that. I think he normally looks more like he does in this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very weird.
I think it's just that, yeah, this one lacked some of that fun, whereas the previous one was like so over the top, and I kind of, there's a happy medium somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think
it's probably the animated show.
Yeah, it's that real fine line, and I think it really depends on your taste, because I think if you do like the crazy, dumb, over-the-top action like you do, Britton, like the first one's going to work more for you. But if you like the more military side of things, like I like how they're all just straight up wearing just like normal soldier gear for most of this movie. That makes a lot more sense to me. Nobody's really using laser guns. They've all just got normal firearms, which I'm just like, okay, that should just be what you did. I almost feel like this should have been the first movie. Like, I wonder, just critically speaking, and I probably still wouldn't have done great, but I do wonder, like, would this have been better received if it were released in 2009?
Sure.
Of course, not everything would be the same. Channing Tatum wouldn't die in the first 20 minutes of the movie, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that I think it is weird, because so much of this movie is a more just military story, but then you're still doing Cobra Commander.
Yes.
And his voice is less silly, but it's still like, okay, but you still got a guy in a helmet yelling about getting the Joes.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, this is still kind of silly, you guys. Like, and I feel like, well, the first one, the visual effects were iffy. This one, I did appreciate the amount of stunt work that was happening. That's pretty cool. It's still, none of it was filmed like amazingly, but, you know, I kind of enjoyed, there's a cliffside fight where the Snake Eyes and Jinx, played by Daredevil's Elodie Young, who I like, they're fighting a bunch of Deadpools, so that's kind of fun.
That is the best action scene of the entire film. I think that is like the key set piece that if anybody remembers this movie, they don't.
Sure.
But if they do, that's the scene that they think of. I think that's a wonderful scene just on its own. Even starting with just the one-on-one between Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, I think that's better shot and just better executed than anything in Rise of Cobra.
Sure.
In terms of them fighting each other. Except for maybe when the little kids are fighting each other and just yelling.
That's wild. That scene is so weird to me still.
But I like how, like, there's a good sense of atmosphere in that opening scene where they're, like, facing each other in the hallway. And, like, the music drowns out. And I want to say, Storm Shadow throws, like, a bunch of shurikens at Snake Eyes. And he's, like, shooting them out of the air. Mm-hmm. It's neat. I like that. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah, it was still good to see Byung-Hun Lee.
Yes.
And to more or less see Ray Park. Because most of the actors in the first movie are not in it.
Yes, and that's... It's such a weird thing, and I can't quite tell how much of it is a lot of the actors didn't want to come back, and how much of it is, oh, well, the last one, we have to make a pivot.
Right.
And we'll have enough connective tissue, like I said, to technically make this a sequel, because, hey, some people did see that last one. But we mostly want to go our own way. So basically, it's really just Jonathan Pryce, Channing Tatum, Byung-Hun Lee, Ray Park, Is there anyone else?
I think that's it.
And I think at the beginning when they're doing like the expository thing where they've got like the flashing like character cards of like, here's where everyone is right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, Duke leads this team with these characters that you've never heard of. I think you can faintly see in the background like, there's Ripcord's card. Right. And like you can see some of the others too. But it just, it feels really weird. And as much as I like some of the actors in this one, I feel like the overall team camaraderie was lacking.
Sure.
And maybe that's just Flint sucks.
Yeah, he's nothing. And that's not DJ Catrona's
fault. Oh, certainly not.
It's just the character is nothing.
And they seem to
Duke in the first movie had more than Flint does.
And I have seen the extended edition to this, which...
That's what I watched.
That's the one that you watched? Yeah. Okay, so remind me, after the opening scene where they're getting a defector out of North Korea, because there's the whole bit where Flint takes out the outpost and he puts up a G.I. Joe flag instead of the North Korean flag, it then cuts to them at a bar, and that's the token scene where DJ Catrona is shirtless because, hey, he's got abs, everyone. That scene is not in the theatrical cut.
Okay.
What happens in that scene? Does anything character-wise happen?
In the bar scene,
yes.
That's when he and Mouse, played by Joseph Mazzello from Jurassic Park.
That's who that was. Okay, he looked familiar. Okay.
Yeah, he's great. I wish he was in the movie more, because he's a good actor, and I like him.
Do they even show him die in that big desert?
It was later in the movie that I realized he was dead.
Yeah. it's weird that they give him any screen time at all.
I know. And set him up like a character.
Yeah.
They do like a bobbing for grenades thing. There's a lot of Dwayne Johnson being a word I can't say on the podcast. There's a lot of just like banter. That's kind of the team building.
Okay.
Thing. We're supposed to believe it. But it's not team building. It's Dwayne Johnson showing everybody that he's the coolest guy in the universe and everyone else sucks compared to him. And I don't like it.
Well, maybe it's for the best that scene was left out then. Because I couldn't remember if that was supposed to try and build up Flint's character. Because there's a couple of moments where he seems to be like the maverick. He seems to be the guy that just goes off on his own and doesn't really trust the team or has doubts about the mission.
Yeah.
And then that kind of just gets dropped.
Right.
Except for the awkward scene where he unzips Lady J's dress and she gives her whole exposition. And then he's just looking at her undressed through a TV and we're not supposed to be creeped out.
Yeah, exactly. It is weird to me, and that Channing Tatum, who I think is a lot better in this movie.
Yeah, and my understanding is they actually did reshoots to add more scenes of him and The Rock interacting with each other. Because they actually have surprisingly good chemistry.
Well, Channing Tatum is funny.
Yeah.
And he's funny in this movie, and they let him do jokes. The performance feels a lot looser. Mm-hmm. And a lot more. And some of that may just be that Channing Tatum has had 4 more years of movie experience, but some of it also might have been that he we talked about how he apparently didn't really want to be in the first one. He's like, I'm only in some of this one. Sure, I'll have some fun.
Yeah. And
then go home.
My guess would be they were like, well, we can't just not have Channing Tatum in this movie because everyone knows like he is, for all intents and purposes, he is G.I. Joe. So he has to be in this one. And he's like, yeah, but guys, remember, I didn't want to be here. And they're like, we'll kill you off in the first act. It's fine.
It's just weird that through all of his scenes, he never mentions Sienna Miller.
Yeah. And
there's no mention of not even a Sydney sends her love. She's getting the kids away. Not even that.
Right. But even more so than that, he doesn't mention Ripcord at all. He keeps talking about roadblocks, my best buddy or whatever. And I'm like, well, no.
Yeah. They do a lot of roadblocks Snake Eyes and I trained together. And I was like, no, you didn't. You absolutely didn't.
Yeah, I think there it could have been handled a lot better in terms of what the rest of the team has been up to. And I think, it's almost like they could have set themselves up in terms of at the end of the last one, because of everything that happened in France, they talk about how all of their respective countries are pulling them out of the G.I. Joe program and are like, you need to return home because you guys are in trouble. And it's like, well, just because they saved the day, they could still be in trouble and just be pulled out of G.I. Joe. I feel like they could have done something with that or just leave it ambiguous in terms of what happened to them. It does, in a way, kind of feel like when you're watching Infinity War and you're like, wait, is Valkyrie dead? Like, what happened to the Ragnarok characters? And then they're just in Endgame of like, yeah, they got away. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff is just strange. I will go ahead and say of Dwayne Johnson, I know I just said I don't like him. I can enjoy him in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie does the thing that kind of defines his career right now. And this is the thing I don't like about his career is, and I think I said this before, but this movie, it is the PR branding push where he has always got the upper hand. He's always the coolest guy in the room. He's always funny. He's always doing well in the fights. He's always got the last line. Everyone respects him. And in this one, we also give him daughters so we can get all excited and turned on by that. You know, I'm truly though, like that's part of it. When he said he's not gonna be president because he likes being a daddy too much, that was very specifically chosen language.
Sure.
but like it's just all of this, like, see, this guy's amazing. He's perfect. He's great. He's great. He's great. He's the most noble. He's the most morally sound. He is always right in this movie. And that is just that is the character they give Dwayne Johnson in so many of his movies. And it works for me in, like, Jumanji because he's a video game character.
Yeah.
And there's jokes about it. And he gets to do something a little different with that performance. And I think he's really funny in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then in this, it's like, come on. I don't want to see a commercial for the Dwayne Johnson persona. Like, come on. It's just too much for me.
And it's also a little lame because, like, just the position that he's in where the arc is, he's kind of the reluctant leader.
Right.
I'm like, no, Dwayne Johnson wants to be the leader. Let's just get this show on the road. Yeah, I found that a little frustrating.
And he's still, like, a very charismatic performer, and he does have good comedic timings. Like, the stuff works. It's just, like, I don't want to just watch a bunch of scenes of him putting everybody down.
Yeah. I feel like, really, the movie shines in terms of that stuff when Channing Tatum is there, and they're just kind of messing with each other.
Sure.
And I'm like, why is this not... Like, I know Channing Tatum didn't want to be there, but I just, like, I kind of wish that was the movie of just, like, maybe the two of them, like, lead the team together.
Sorry, guys. Who is looking after his daughters? Because he comes back, and they're like, Daddy! And I was like, did you Mrs. Maisel those kids?
Well, the editing on it is a little fuzzy because, if I remember correctly, there's the opening scene where they're going into North Korea to get the defector, which has no bearing on the plot. It's just a semi-fun open, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised. I feel like they should have opened it with a lot more action, but whatever.
Sure.
They were focused on character. What can I say? And
yeah, a lot of G.I. Joe movies are plot-driven. This one's character-driven.
But it does that scene... and then I guess the bar scene after that. And then cut to they're at home in the U.S. and it's Roadblock and Duke playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Yes, I recognize specifically which one they were playing because I played that one.
And I was better at both of them and I platinumed.
yes. And then his daughter's running and it's like, oh, it's a character building moment. And then they're just like back in the desert. Like, the very next scene that they're in, I'm like, so did they come home from deployment? Like, how does that work?
Right. There is. I've told Tyler that I want him to be video game friends with Ben Mendelsohn. I need you to become video game friends with Channing Tatum.
Look, I bet he's great at Apex Legends, okay? I bet he is.
I bet he is. Man, the two of you. And I'll become Stardew Valley friends with Hannah Einbinder. She's probably, I don't have confirmation that she plays Stardew, but I bet she would.
Can we connect this back to G.I. Joe? Does Christopher Eccleston play Stardew Valley?
Christopher Eccleston plays Starfield, and he's upset that there aren't as many planets as they said there were going to be.
Yeah, I see that in my head. This makes
sense. Tell you who I'd be scared to play video games with is Adrienne Palicki, because she would kick me out. she's good. I like her. I like Adrienne Palicki in general. She's great on Friday Night Lights. I think she does a good job in this. Mm-hmm. She's a good action performer. She's got the right pitch for this kind of movie. Like, I think she's good.
Yeah, and I think aside from, like, the big set piece where she has to basically sneak into this big presidential ball and like and basically she's trying to get is it like a lock of Jonathan Pryce's hair or is it like some kind of fingerprints or something? They're trying to confirm whether or not he is actually the president. So she's trying to like sneak some of his DNA that way Roadblock can test it on the side. And of course she's in a, you know, semi-revealing dress to try and look attractive. And like, that's fine. I think that's perfectly fine for this kind of movie. But then you also have the scene where she's like in jogging shorts because she's trying to pick up like one of the president's aides so they can find out what's going on. And then also, like I said, there's the scene where she undresses and it's such a tonal clash, that scene, because she's like pouring her heart out about like, my dad always thought like I could not make it that far as a soldier and that women should not be in the military. And so what I've always wanted to do was get to the point where I would outrank him so he would have to salute me. And he died before I got the chance to do that. Cut to Flint looking at her while she's undressing. It is so weird.
Well, and yeah, they still can't get away from the like sexualizing.
But it's stuff. But it's really just that section. Other than that, like I think
no, she's not.
Yeah, I think overall she's treated a lot better than both Rachel Nichols and Sienna Miller.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, it's very strange. Very strange. Yeah, I like that she at least kind of had a character. I kind of had a read on her and a very kind of weak back and forth with Bruce Willis, but I like how that ultimately paid off at the end. That was cute.
It's weird to me that he says, I served with your father and he'd be proud of you at the end of the movie, when I feel like he should have said earlier, oh yeah, I served with your father. And then at the end he says he'd be proud of you.
The thing that confuses me is I don't get why he antagonizes her when he does.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I like Bruce Willis in this. I think that he's actually pretty solid. And this was the same year as Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, man.
And I actually think he's fun in this. And having it be like, oh, he's kind of the inspiration for G.I. Joe in the first place. Oh, that's fun that you got a classic action hero to be that part. That's cool.
Well, I can also imagine for the section of the audience that were kids with the animated series, who would have then grown up and seen Die Hard in the theaters as preteens or whatever.
Yeah.
To be watching G.I. Joe and Bruce Willis shows up, like, I can see how that would have an extra punch.
Sure.
For a child of the 80s, you know.
I do like the whole bit at the end where they're going to save the actual president. And, like, they're spinning around the car and he's mowing down all the Cobra guys.
Yeah.
And then he looks at Adrian Palicki and he's like, you okay? Yeah, I'm good. You? My cholesterol is a little high. And then she just rolls her eyes. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. That's cute. That's fun, like, dumb action movie dialogue.
Right. Yeah, I think you know, I think the cast is fine overall. I don't know if I'm missing anybody major. Because Vosloo doesn't really... You see his face a little bit here and there. He's not really in it.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if they actually got him, like, on set or if they just, like, had a digital double of him. Because there's a couple of times where Jonathan Pryce will, like, cut into his face and the nanomites reveal Zartan's face and then it goes back to Jonathan Pryce. But it does look like they get him there at least for a couple of days.
I will say probably the main cast member we haven't talked about is RZA.
Yeah, let's talk about RZA, and then let's get into Team Cobra, because Ray Stevenson, rest in peace, but he is giving a performance.
Yeah, RZA, okay, here's the thing. Those scenes with RZA where it's a secret dojo somewhere where Elodie Young wants to be in G.I. Joe, so apparently she has to go to this place to train with Snake Eyes. RZA is doing a, like, sensei performance. He is doing the cadence of that speech. He is not necessarily doing an accent. It's weird that all of that stuff reminded me so much of DOA Dead or Alive, which is one of my favorite bad movies, but not in a good way. Because DOA is it's a bad movie. It's very stupid, and it's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
This was just like, why are we here? This is a different movie on a different budget.
Yeah, remind me, because the whole opening scene with them isn't Jinx, she has to do some kind of test.
She has to, she's blindfolded and has to like land a hit on Snake Eyes or defend her or something like that.
That whole scene is not in the movie. There is a brief montage showing them like training before they go on their mission to go hunt down Storm Shadow. Jeez. But that whole scene's gone. I think it's briefly like RZA is like, yeah, Storm Shadow's back. Also, Storm Shadow died at the end of the last one. We just forget about that entirely. And it's not like the plausible, somebody was able to grab him or whatever. But like he falls like underneath this base that's like in the Arctic and explodes and is just like rubble and everything sinking.
Yeah.
It
got better.
It got better. That's just something that they sweep under the rug. Although it's weird that they make such a big deal out of, like, there's a plot point where after, like, the prison break scene, which we'll talk about, Walton Goggins and yada yada, Storm Shadow, like, gets badly burned, like, on his back, and that's why they take him to that mountain set piece to get healed.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
Oh, and it is gone very quickly.
But I'm like, why is that not mentioned as the reason that he's back in the first place?
Sure. Sure.
Whatever.
I know. Yeah, I will say, you're also doing this all these action scenes with RZA and Ray Park and Elodie Young. And Elodie Young is, I believe, the only East Asian person in those scenes.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I like her. I've only really seen her in this and Daredevil. And I remember before I got to her in Daredevil being like, I've seen superhero shows before. This could be the most annoying performance on the program. It is not. She's good on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was just thinking of Huntress on Arrow. But not the most annoying performance. But like I'm used to the CW kind of stuff.
Sure.
But I thought she was good. And I liked her in this. You know, she's giving it her all.
She has nothing to do.
Nothing.
She's basically just a glorified stunt person in this.
Yes.
I got very frustrated by that because there's the whole thing with like Snake Eyes has that special sword as well, which is whatever exposition there is in the extended cut is not in the theatrical version. Like he just has that sword, and so when he gives it to Storm Shadow going into the third act, it's like the significance of that is not here.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's the whole there's a bit of exposition I think where RZA goes, Snake Eyes doesn't trust you, and I'm like, but why? Is it just that she's new? Did she used to work for Cobra and she's a turncoat? Is there any sort of context you want to give me so I actually care? Yeah. She could be easily written out of the movie, unfortunately. It's cool that she's here, but
yeah, that's wild.
Yeah,
I do. I do like that Storm Shadow is the one that gets to kill Vartan at the end.
Yeah, they try and give Storm Shadow a little bit of a character arc where they actually discover what happened when he was a child. And it's like, no, it's not his fault that their master died. He didn't assassinate him. It was actually Arnold Vosloo the whole time. It was
actually him the whole time. Yeah, in disguise as an old Asian man, which is a choice.
Yes. I do like the line at the end where Byung-Hun Lee is confronting Jonathan Pryce, and he's like, so you killed the Hard Master, and Jonathan Pryce is just holding him at gunpoint going, yeah, I can see now that that was wrong.
I love that they keep saying Hard Master.
Yeah.
That's
because I think so the guy that gets killed when they're children, he is the Hard Master, and RZA is the Blind Master, I think is the idea.
Okay.
Sure. G.I. Joe names are fun. You just got to get used to it. They're made to sell toys.
Yes. I did like Ray Stevenson just fine. As you said, he did pass away recently. I hear he's good on Ahsoka. I like him in RRR. He's in King Arthur.
He's great in Punisher Warzone. I love him in that.
But is he Punisher in that?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe not my favorite Punisher, but he's really fun.
Sure.
That movie is delightful.
Yeah, your favorite is Thomas Jane.
I mean, potentially. We'll do them eventually, and then I'll be like, but we're not watching the John Bernthal show.
I know, I've only seen the Daredevil version, and Bernthal is fantastic. Because he's John Bernthal.
See, we're going to watch all of those and be like, nope, Dolph, he's my favorite.
That's right, he did one.
A movie I have not seen.
It's fair, though.
Bernthal is great. I the thing to point out about Ray Stevenson is he is doing an accent that is both from the American South, Australia, England, and New York.
Yes.
It is all over the place. It is amusing and confusing.
Yeah. I did watch some of the behind the scenes stuff, and even the writers are like, yeah, we have no idea what he's doing. We love it, but we have no idea what he's doing.
The other person I loved in this is Walton Goggins. He's awesome.
Yes. And I'm like, just make him Cobra Commander. Like, why is he not the bad guy?
He gets one scene as a mean, like, sassy warden.
Yes.
At this, like, intense prison where they're keeping Destro and Cobra Commander in, like, these Bacta tanks.
Yes.
And he's so, like, snipey and catty. I love Walton Goggins so much.
And I mean, if you have to, like, force feed exposition about how, like, a certain set piece operates, I mean, having him go, now this is awesome, and then he's just talking about all this detail and he's super excited about it. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's great.
How did you feel about that whole prison break scene? Because Destro's just stuck in there, and because they didn't want to have to deal with that anymore, Cobra Commander goes, Destro, you're out of the band.
I forgot about that. That's so silly. That's pretty good, though. Yeah, I think I was spent so much of the time going, I wonder who's doing Cobra Commander's voice now.
Yeah, because it's clearly...
Obviously, they did not get JGL in there.
Yeah, right.
JGL was like, I'm Looper. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, and I remember seeing it back when it first came out, and I assumed that he would not be in the movie. But there's that brief moment where he gets out of that tank, and he, like, can't breathe, and he's searching for the oxygen mask. And I'm like, did they, like, CG on JGL's face? What's going on? And I think it's just a stunt guy that they probably put makeup on. That's, Yeah. It's interesting. I do like that they make Storm Shadow do the really dumb, like, action movie cliche that we pointed out in Die Another Day. Bond does this where he slows his heart rate down enough to the point where they think he's suffering from cardiac arrest.
Right.
And then he pulls a fast one on him.
He also cuts a bullet out of the air.
Yes.
Which... there are movies in which I'd go, oh, that's awesome. And in this hell's like, all right, come on.
Well, I think the big snow mountain set piece already steals that thunder with Snake Eyes shooting the shurikens out of the air. I think that already kind of, like, huh.
I just like them running on the cliffsides, not like cutting the tethers,
making
all the guys.
That is genuinely cool. That is, like, it, just as a set piece, that is well shot. They just let the camera hold and, like, it has slow motion in all the right places to accentuate the action. That was fun. I like that.
Well, there's a bit where all the Deadpools are looking down at them, and there's like they're surrounded, and then Snake Eye shoots a flare up into the mountain and makes an avalanche kill them all. Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah. No, that's
it's like I think I've done that quick time event before.
I think the other main difference between the cuts is just like small little bits of action. Throughout, like I think. That opening scene, is it in Pakistan where they're recovering those warheads?
I think so.
I think that has like a little bit more action just kind of placed throughout, but none of it really makes that big of an impact as far as I'm aware. I liked that scene. I could probably be shot and edited a little better, but like compared to kind of the Steven Summers action scenes from Rise of Cobra... maybe less interesting, but that's more of what I wanted. I was just like, military guys going in and shooting up bad guys. Like, that's kind of more of what I'm looking for. Sure. I don't know. I thought it was neat. Oh, I was very confused because, as you pointed out, like, they really pull back on the technology.
Right.
You've got, like, the opening scene where Roadblock has, like, these really, like, these gauntlets that, like, are able to
that
melt
was kinda
a
cool.
fence.
I like those.
And then the Pakistan scene has basically Lady J and Mouse have, like, these special rifles that have basically little like mini drone bullets where they mm-hmm. shoot them and then they can kind of steer them to their mm-hmm. target. That should be used throughout the movie, right? Yeah. Or like it should be used in the finale somehow. And it's just yeah. like, no, we've got a little gimmick that is used like once.
No, instead Bruce Willis has given him weapons and he says, let's get something more your size to Dwayne Johnson. And Dwayne Johnson gets a tank.
Yeah.
A very fast, very movable tank, by the way.
Yeah,
the tank moves like a car.
Like I said, I don't want to dock many points from the movie for pulling back, but that final act is really small.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, like, I think they do a good job disguising a lot of the movie, because they actually shot all of it in Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
The desert scenes, like... That's why the estate where they're keeping the president at, like, it looks like a more, like, he's supposed to be a southern president, and that's, like, his retreat. So I think they do a good job disguising that. Like, the DC sequences aren't, like, super distracting or anything.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end, like, when they're chasing each other around in those little boats, I'm like, this feels like it's shot in Louisiana. Like, it just, like, I don't know. Like, it just doesn't feel like... super grand or big. It just feels really, really small.
Well, then the alligator jumps up and starts playing the trombone, the trumpet.
I mean, that could have done something. Could have added
that
something.
That firefly is in love with a star and he dies.
I guess the Rock does lose the first fight with Firefly, I guess.
I guess, yeah, he loses.
Well, there's the scene like they're Flint and Lady J are looking at him while he's like getting up all disheveled and defeated.
Yeah, so. And Lady J does have to like sew up an injury.
Yeah,
later. Yeah, that's true. I don't know at what point in his career he started the like I contractually cannot lose a fight.
Yeah, because I can't remember. Because I think that may have started with Fast Five, which okay. Fast Five came out in 2011. So if this was supposed to come out in 2012, that may have been the last film that he did. So, I don't know. It's not great. And, yeah, just all of the Joes running around Fort Sumter, just shooting guns. It's like I said, it's just really small and kind of lame, and I can't really keep track of a lot of the geography. It's not super well edited. Snake
or the GI Griffy.
GI Geography. And then like Snake Eyes has nothing to do in that final act. I think he runs around with some guns for a little bit. I'm like, he's a ninja. Let him use his I guess he gave the sword of exposition to Storm Shadow or whatever. Yeah. Aside from Jonathan Pryce being like, I'm gonna trick all of y'all into blowing up your warheads, I really like that ending falls apart for me.
He plays Angry Birds at one time and like spins his finger around and goes, high score.
What? I do really like the scene where the Joes get ambushed in the desert.
Oh, sure.
I actually think that does a really good job of being hectic and chaotic. Oh. And it's very clear that a lot of the Joes are like getting killed very quickly.
Yeah.
I don't really like how Duke's death is handled, because mm-hmm. it's almost like it's just ambiguous enough to be like, he could come back from that, I feel.
And I imagine that was part of an intention.
And it's just real weird how they shoot this when they finally climb out of the, because they drop down the hole with the, what is it called?
It's a well.
It's a well. That's what I'm thinking of. That's the word. My brain's not working right now because we're talking about G.I. Joe Retaliation. And they go and recover the dog tags from Duke's body. And it's like, it's not even clear in the shot that it's Channing Tatum. Like, it almost is like, did they just put his stunt double in there? Like, this is real weird how they're shooting this. And I did almost think when I first saw this in the theater, I was like, are they bringing him back later? Like, is this supposed to be something weird? It's kind of like Cyclops in X-Men 3, where it's just like, why are you killing him off screen? Like,
yeah.
And it's funny because I went back and looked a little bit at the behind the scenes for not just this movie, but also the animated G.I. Joe movie from the 80s.
Okay.
Apparently the intent with that was also to kill off Duke.
Huh.
But because they had killed off Optimus in the Transformers movie that same year, so many kids were like freaked out and traumatized and all the parents were upset. They backed off on that and like, oh, Duke's in a coma. And there's like thrown away ADR at the end of like, he's coming out of the coma. He's going to be all right.
That's funny.
And it's just funny that like 25, 30 years later, they come back and like, no, we can do that. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Kids don't care about Duke anymore.
I don't think anyone cares about Duke anymore.
There's a pretty funny moment at the end when they're all getting their medals from Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis also gives Dwayne Johnson a gun.
It's Patton's like gun.
General Patton's gun. And he's like, this is for when you kill Cobra Commander. And then Dwayne Johnson points it at the sky, fires, cut to that How Do You Like Me Now song over the credits.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be, I genuinely thought Dwayne Johnson was going to be like, oh, found him. And then just shoots. Okay. We don't. Okay.
I do think
this is the middle of a military ceremony, guys.
I think it's a good point of comparison, and I think this really speaks to the tones of the movie, of both movies. The end credits of the first film is like a remix of a Black Eyed Peas song.
Okay.
And then this one is the heavy. I think that, sure, that kind of tells you, like, it made sense to me. Can't really speak to anyone else, but it made sense to me, and that's all that matters. Other things that I gleaned from the behind-the-scenes stuff, they basically come out and say, yeah, we admit that we made a lot of mistakes with the last one. It was really funny because they're very diplomatic about it. Like, yeah, we may have gone too big and too sci-fi, and really that's not what G.I. Joe is about, so we decided to rein it back. I'm like, this... And maybe it's just because behind the scenes stuff is just like right now it feels like so much of it is just very like PR heavy. And it's like you have to make the movie look as good as you possibly. And like the entire franchise has to look and sound as good as you possibly can make it.
It's just another commercial.
And so like even if they're being a bit diplomatic about it, I do appreciate when they go, yeah, we realized the last one wasn't really what we were maybe should have made in the first place. So we're having to pivot a little bit. But then you got the writers who folks should recognize them. Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who have written the Deadpool movies and Zombieland and other things. So a little up and down in terms of their writing.
Dances with Wolves, Cries and Whispers, etc.
Yeah.
Through a Glass Darkly.
Godfather Part 3. They wrote that too. Coppola took the credit. I don't know why he did. But yeah, it's really weird because they're like, yeah, they basically gave us room to do whatever we wanted. I'm like, did they? Did they though? Britton, how does John M. Chu compare as a director to Stephen Sommers in terms of trying to make a big, dumb popcorn movie?
I mean, I think I still enjoyed... I think the previous one is more Stephen Sommers' wheelhouse.
Yeah.
That even if he's not making great versions of that, he is used to making versions of that.
Sure.
And Chu, I think at this point, had mostly done like the Step Up movies and probably something else.
The Justin Bieber movie is the big one that they specifically call that out in the behind the scenes stuff. Cause I think, Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, the producer on all these, he talks about like, yeah, the Paramount guys were like, oh, John M. Chu. And I was like, the Justin Bieber guy? What? Huh? apparently John M. Chu is actually like a big G.I. Joe fan and like grew up with this as a franchise, which might explain why it's more focused on like the military stuff, because that's
sure.
I don't know. It seems like he's got more reverence for the material, which is weird because it's a sequel to the movie that doesn't seem to have that much reverence for the material. Right. So it's weird to kind of have to circle back on that. Like, I can imagine him, like, being super frustrated and be like, no, Duke shouldn't die.
Yeah.
When they're like, yeah, Channing doesn't want to be in the movie, but we want him in the movie. This is the only way. The only way.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know what, because he then ended up becoming a musical director, and I don't really, I guess because he directed the Step Up movies.
And the Justin Bieber concert movie.
And the Justin Bieber concert movie.
I can't wait for next week after we review Snake Eyes for your recommendation to be the Justin Bieber concert movie and be like, John M. Chu, you finally got me with that one. I get it now.
Yeah. Not Now You See Me, a movie I probably will watch at some point.
Well, yeah. We'll put that on the list.
There's two of them.
Yeah. You know.
Why not? Lizzie Kaplan's in one of them.
If you squint real hard, there's three of them.
Exactly. It's called The Prestige.
I do like that the movie, at least the theatrical cut, is under 2 hours. And I think the cut that you watched is like right at 2 hours.
It's like 2 and 4. I mean, it's not that
bad.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I don't know. This is just a weird movie because I feel like so much of the tone and the feel of it is what I want. I just want the script to be smarter.
Right. Well, and it does. It is interesting to me how the extended cut actually, because oftentimes extended cuts is just longer scenes or extra stuff that doesn't really matter, and sometimes makes the movie worse.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's like, oh no, it sounds like the extended cut is a better movie and makes the movie make sense.
Yeah.
Even if it's still not good, quote unquote, it at least I understand what's happening.
Yeah, I think it adds more context at the very least.
Yeah. And it didn't feel bloated when I watched it. It didn't feel like, oh, this is clearly not in the movie and they just had this laying around and are shoving it in.
Yeah.
It feels more like, yeah, this is you're telling me a story, sure.
Yeah.
You're a real movie.
I think Henry Jackman was the composer for this.
He was.
And
he was indeed.
The score made no impression on me, which I guess is better than me not liking Silvestri's score for Rise of Cobra. But, like, I don't know. G.I. Joe feels like something where they should have, like, a big, grand theme.
Yeah, like a march.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it's a little on the cheesier side. I mean, Silvestri's done that. Like, he did his first Avenger theme, certainly. I don't know. This is a very mixed bag of a movie, and I think it's one that I want to like a lot more than I ultimately do at the end of the day.
Sure. I get that. What are you going to grade it?
I think I'm going to give it the same grade that I gave Rise of Cobra. I think I'm going to give it a D+. Somehow, I think the script for the first one is probably stronger. I think it probably has a more cohesive story. And like we talked about, like the team camaraderie is a bit better. Yeah. Some of the characters are interchangeable, but at least I feel like none of them are like completely useless like Flint is in this. I think just on an aesthetic level and like in terms of action set pieces and things, this is more of what I want.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to say that it's better than Rise of Cobra.
Right. I'm going to go flat D. I'm going to go down a bit. I think a lot of it really just comes down to me not thinking the previous one is great, but the previous one is closer to a good bad, and this is closer to just a bad movie for me.
Sure.
There is some competency here. I obviously praise some of the performances and some of the fights. Like, it's by no means a horrible, horrible movie. It was just like, all right, I've seen this. Like, I know this movie.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
I did like the bit where Cobra Commander goes to his Cobra base, and we have, like, dropped any and all pretense of, like, oh, it's Mars Industries and Christopher Eccleston was in charge of all this or whatever. Because, like, somehow Cobra just, like, has all this technology and we're not really dealing with how they get their funding or whatever. Just don't worry about it. But, all of his men are, like, saluting him and stuff as he's walking through. And then one of them's like, oh, we've got these new tanks. And he's, like, spelling out the acronym. He's like, you're going to love this. HISS. I was like, that probably worked a lot better on paper than it did out of somebody's mouth.
Sure. That's cute.
Yeah.
Do you have a recommendation?
I do. For once, I do. I haven't had anything in the past couple of weeks. I watched The Man from U.N.C.L.E. The Guy Ritchie film from 2016?
Summer around.
2017? Yeah, 2015. Jeez, okay. I'm old. Yeah, I had a ton of fun with it. I was not expecting it to be quite as fun as it was, but I mean, I like the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes movies, so I shouldn't be too surprised.
There's also guys who are talking about suits and also killing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 60s Cold War spy thing, so I should have liked it to a certain degree anyway. Yeah, it's Henry Cavill and Armie Hammer, setting aside all the outside the film stuff. They're both really good in the movie. I like their camaraderie and banter.
One that lets Henry Cavill be charming.
Yes, yes. And with an American accent, too, which I have kind of been under the impression that he was one of those actors, kind of like we talked about with Emilia Clarke and Jai Courtney, where when they're forced to adopt a, like, flat American accent, they suddenly lose, like, all of their personality. So they need to stick with just like their accent or some kind of spin on their accent. But Henry Cavill, I'm like, oh yeah, I could, this shows me more of his range. All right. I want to see him in more things where he gets to be suave and cool.
And like have jokes.
It'd be nice if, some of Superman had that, but or whatever.
The Witcher,
You know, no use crying over spilled milk, you Snyder freaks.
No use crying over spilled hero cake.
That's true. I was also going to go with a spilled pearls Martha joke somewhere. There's something there. You can string that together.
Oh, there it is.
But I think actually my favorite performance in the movie is Alicia Vikander. She's kind of a pseudo love interest that is like caught in the middle of everything that's going on. And she is just like really fun because she's just like mad at everyone and is kind of flirty, kind of aggressive. And then kind of she's kind of in over her head. Like, I don't know. She was really having fun with it and I could tell. And there's a whole scene where she just kind of attacks Armie Hammer and is just like trying to beat him up. And I'm like, this is great. it's just like a really fun, like light hour 45 or like 2 hour movie. Yeah. And Elizabeth Debicki's in it. She's the bad guy and she's really good. I just had a lot of fun with it. And honestly, I could see myself doing a double feature of Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Bullet Train. Like very different styles, but like light breezy action movies with really good casts.
Sure.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, good. I'm glad you finally got to that one, because that's the one that I don't remember it super clearly, but as long as we've known each other, I've been like, Alex needs to watch this. He would like it.
It's not the most amazing movie ever, but like in terms of just like a smartly made action movie, particularly compared to the last two G.I. Joe movies, it definitely did the trick.
Well, yay. In keeping with the theme of action movies and whatnot, I'm going to recommend the 1957 musical Funny Face.
Is John M. Chu remaking that? Is that why?
Don't say that to me. Every morning I wake up screaming. This is a movie directed by the great Stanley Donen, stars Fred Astaire and Audrey Hepburn. It's a movie that I think some of the numbers are duds, but some of the numbers are great. The two things that really left out to me in this movie are, I really like Stanley Donen as a director. He did Singing in the Rain and On the Town and It's Always Fair Weather. And I love all three of those movies, and I really, really like this one. And he's someone who, I have to rewatch those others to see how much it happens there, but in this one, he seems really interested in making it an interesting-looking movie. It's a beautifully shot movie. The angles are interesting, and you don't think about this as much with like older movies, particularly older musicals, where a lot of it is just kind of like a flat like stage, essentially. But here, he's got interesting angles. The way he stages the actors within the shots are really interesting. There's a lot of color. He just seems to have a real eye in this one. He seems to really be interested in just shooting it differently. And it looks really, really great. There's a number. Audrey Hepburn is just by herself. She works in a bookshop and she's in, like, it's a lot of the lights are out and she's in like a brown and black outfit, but she's wearing this hat with this like long green veil on it. And that adds so much color, and the way that's angled and lit is really beautiful. There's a dance number shot entirely in a photography darkroom, so it's all in red. That's really cool. And when that scene started, I was like, is this going to get old? And it didn't. So it just looks terrific. And the second thing is Audrey Hepburn is really great in it. I'm totally on the Audrey Hepburn train now. I've never been anti-Audrey Hepburn. I was always like, oh, what an amazing person. I haven't fallen in love with her movies yet. Now I'm there. Because in this movie, she is so charming and likable and sexy and adorable and just delightful. The movie does ask you to buy that any human on the earth would be like, I don't really know about this person as a fashion icon. Because it's all about, she is a bookshop proprietor, and there's like this big fashion magazine that decides to shoot in her bookstore. And Fred Astaire is like, hey, I think this girl's got something. He's a photographer. And then she gets whisked off to Paris to be a model. And hijinks ensue. Fred Astaire feels a little out of place in it, and there is a fairly egregious age difference between them. But this movie is still done charmingly enough. It doesn't play... there's some iffiness in that love story, but it's also a movie made in 1957. Like, Audrey Hepburn has this whole dance number in, like, a French, like, beat poet club where she's just dancing. It's really wild and fun. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, there are some numbers that I was like, yeah, all right, sure. And I really like Fred Astaire, but I don't think this was his best vehicle. But it's a terrific vehicle for Audrey Hepburn. And I wish she had done more musicals that involved her dancing, because a lot of dancers in that era would just like plaster a smile on their face and go. And it's great. But her, she's like emoting during the dance numbers, and she's moving her face and her bouncing her eyebrows around and making face. She's just delightful to watch in it. I think she's so, so good. So yeah, I liked it a lot, and you can too. And it's called Funny Face.
So Todd Phillips. Funny Face, a Joker, if you will.
Yeah, he is. He does have a funny face.
And there's two of them, so folie à deux.
Yeah, funny à deux. I bet Lady Gaga said something about Audrey Hepburn on the set of that movie.
I bet a lot of things were said about a lot of people on the set of that movie.
It's going to be my favorite movie of 2024.
No, it's not.
No, it won't be.
I'll put it to you this way. It'll be a miracle if it's not your most hated movie of 2024.
Don't come into my house.
We'll put a positive spin on it. It'll be your least liked film of 2024. Yeah. Not most hated. It'll be your least liked.
There you go. Oh, Lord. We're going to be okay.
Got to put some sort of spin on it. We got to make it through this podcast somehow.
I got old musicals to watch. I'm going to be all right. I don't want to become one of those people who's like, oh, they don't make them like they used to. Old movies are better.
But also, they don't make them like they used to. Old movies are better.
Well, they certainly don't, because we don't have to make things one way forever.
I saw Transformers Rise of the Beast, G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra, G.I. Joe Retaliation, and I'm watching Snake Eyes G.I. Joe Origins next week. I can tell you, sir, that old movies are better.
You know what? When you put it that way.
We did watch Guardians 3 before all that, so.
That's true. That's true. And John Wick before that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to become one of those people, but that's just the mood I'm in these days, is I want to watch old movies.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm in that, like, I'm in my old movie era, if you will.
Well, I mean, just by virtue of, you know, we tend to watch very green screen heavy films, stuff that focuses a lot on the visual effects, and sometimes it looks good, sometimes it does not. So just being able to walk into a movie and go, no, this is 100% practical. I don't have to worry about it for a single frame of the film.
Yeah. They built it. They shot on it.
I can see how that can be just like a warm, comforting blanket of just security.
and also just like, it's so easy to put on an old musical because they're just very like light.
Yeah.
Like last night I was getting later. And I was like, well, I kind of want to watch something. And I almost watched the Defiant ones. And then I almost pressed play and I went, I am not in the headspace to watch this movie. I bet it's great. I really do want to watch it and I will. But I was like, no. But like with an old movie, an old musical, you can just be like, yeah, whatever. You can check out and invest yourself whatever you want to do. It's great. And there is just something too about, we tend to watch movies from our lifetimes.
Sure.
And this is so before me that it's like, I've heard about these actors, I've heard about these movies, but I haven't actually watched them. And that makes me want to like seek out. And I don't have the like same kind of cultural zeitgeist that I do if I see Emma Stone in something. I'm like, oh, I love Emma Stone. What else do I want to see Emma Stone in?
Yeah.
Well, not that or that or that or that or that or that. But with Audrey Hepburn, I'm like, I don't know. I've never seen Sabrina. Let's find out what I feel about Sabrina.
Sure.
So that's just, it's just a different kind of mystery.
I can't wait for Todd Phillips to do an entire documentary about musicals in Hollywood, and just like it's a full, just like it's a 10-part series or something, and it's just
Sweeney Todd and Repo the Genetic Opera. Yeah. No, he would talk about Chaplin and Singing in the Rain. Oh Lord. Well, next week you get to watch Snake Eyes, which simultaneously has been the one that I've been like, yeah, I'm interested to see that. And Alex is like, I don't want it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, when we were watching Rise of Cobra and I got about an hour in, I messaged the Will Arnett GIF to our group chat from Arrested Development of him going, I think I've made a huge mistake. I still feel that way. And... neither of these movies has lived up to my expectations for what I wanted to get out of doing them. And now I have to watch the one that I only made. I made it 20 minutes into Snake Eyes and was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Not also, that it was flat out awful. It was just boring.
Why is he not in Cobra if his name is Snake Eyes? Did no one think about this, Hasbro?
No.
The Hasbro logo looked weird in G.I. Joe Retaliate or Rise of Cobra. G.I. Joe, Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, don't say that. That hurt my heart. That was payback for Todd Phillips. I get it.
If you want to heal and hear our hearts, you can find us online at herecomethesequels.blogspot.com. You can email us at herecomethesequels@gmail.com. You can X us at X at HTT Sequels. I don't know if you say tweet anymore. We all do. It's the same thing. And we're out there. We're on Spotify and Apple and the other ones that you can get. CastBox and probably the other stuff.
Heal our hearts by justifying the fact that we're watching the G.I. Joe movies by listening to our podcast.
Yeah. Make it count.
Make it count.
Don't let history rob us of this meme. I feel like send memes.
I feel like,
so that when Tyler comes back, he has memes.
I feel like us sending Tyler away, and by that I mean Tyler made the choice to step away for a few weeks, whatever. I feel like in this metaphor, you and I are Duke and he is Flint, where we just kind of push him away, we fall for a second, and then we get blown up by the G.I. Joe franchise.
Also, make no mistake, we sent him away. We didn't mean to, but through our words and actions, we did.
I mean, we said we were going to do G.I. Joe, and he was like, all right, I'm good.
He was like, oh, my headache. Oh, it's happening again.
Maybe this metaphor works a lot better if we're reversed, and Tyler is Channing Tatum, because he didn't want to be here.
So he just gets to go chill and make White House Down.
I could be a Flint. I could be a boring guy who just runs around and complains. I do that anyway.
I could be a Lady J and have Jonathan Pryce tell me I look fair and balanced.
See, the movie knows what it's doing. It's hard-hitting politics. It knows what it's doing.
I didn't hate that joke. As like, what would a sleazy guy say? I didn't hate that.
No, I actually thought, yeah.
I love Jonathan Pryce.
The movie has moments where you're like, is it about to get good? And then it doesn't.
Yeah. And you're like, all right. All right, movie. Credit where it's
due. And then The Rock, like, punches whatever it is out of frame and goes, no, this is mine. This is mine. Right.
There's that Deadpool magic.
And we didn't have to look at anyone's butt. Or whatever he does in that movie.
I mean, he looks at his own butt, basically.
Yeah.
Whatever. I can't wait for Deadpool 3 to do Cameo City for the Fox X-Men universe. The movie is tailor-made for me, and it's gonna upset me so much.
Probably. All of those things are probably true. And I will probably leave saying the same thing I said after Deadpool 1 and 2, which is, that was cute. Cute movie. It was sweet. Yeah, it was a cute little movie.
I think I'm going to walk out and I'm going to spot like the big standee in the theater for Deadpool 3. It's going to be Deadpool and like Hugh Jackman like back to back with their arms crossed. And I'm going to, like, my eyes are going to go red and I'm going to go like chasing after it. And you guys are going to have to like hold me back while I'm trying to destroy this poor standee that I'm sure the theater employees have worked hours on putting together, because those things are not easy to put together.
No, they are not.
We've done this. We have experience.
They're annoying. It takes up the whole floor.
Yep. But yeah, I'm gonna destroy it. How dare they?
We could carry you out, and the last thing they hear as the door closes is, Liev Schreiber deserves better than that.
Next week, Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins.
The true rise of a cobra.
they're all bad, aren't they? They're yeah. Like I said, I made a huge mistake. I've been Alex.
Hey, I've been Britton, and you're having a good night.